going, that was good last night, wasn't it, when we all made monkeys of ourselves? Good. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, go a long way entering Parliament looking like that. Yeah. They would, believe me. Yesterday we spoke about being an ass for God, and the fact that, well, actually I was supposed to tell you something. Can't remember what it was. I'll tell you another time. Now I remember it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, big mouth, big mistakes. Okay. Today we're going to talk about... Okay. I'll look over this side now. There's grievous bodily harm over there in Jesus' name. No, we talked about being full on for Christ, being prepared to be Balaam or the ass, whichever one was most available, and recognising that when you are working for the Lord, that there will be mistakes, that you will make mistakes, but Christ has the equivalent of forgiveness and love to extend to us. Today we're going to have a look at, and the title I think is called Yes Please. They're not very good triggers for your mind, are they? Yes, please, yes, please. But this is about unfailing faith, saying yes, please, irrespective of what Christ asks us to do. Life is full of unanswered questions, isn't it? It is. All of our lives, irrespective of the period that we're in, whether we're, you know, in 15 to... No, it's younger than that. 13 to 15, the hormone fairies come and... whether you're a boy or a girl, 18 to 25, who is this bloke that God might have for me? 25 on, well, what's life all about? Here's some other imponderables. If you throw a cat out of a car window, does it become kitty litter? Why do they put Braille on the number pads of drive-through bank machines? Think about it. Why do kamikaze pilots wear helmets? How do you know when it's time to tune bagpipes? Is it true that that cannibals don't eat clowns because they taste funny? If you shoot a mime, should you use a silencer? If a funeral procession is at night, do folks drive with their lights off? I haven't seen too many funeral processions at night. If a stealth bomber crashed in a forest, would it make any sound? If the police arrest a mime, do they tell him he has the right to remain silent? And for all the New Zealanders, when it rains, why don't sheep shrink? Actually, that's a good question. You ask any man that question when he does the washing. Oh, I don't know, but my woolens do. So life is full of imponderable questions, but sometimes the questions that we have that we don't get answers for is because we either wouldn't cope with the answers or we don't need them. And Jesus Christ says to us, trust me. Just trust me. We're going to have a look today at Luke chapter 1. And we're going to compare two people with similar news, similar, not the same, similar news, and we're going to have a look at their reactions and God's reaction to them. We're going to have Luke chapter 1 and verse 6. And this is Zechariah. Now, Zechariah was an old wrinkly bloke. And he was a member of the priestly order of Abijah. His wife Elizabeth was of the priestly line of Aaron. So both of them were well taught. They were both well taught people. Zechariah and Elizabeth were righteous in God's eyes, So they lived close to God. They were careful to obey all of God's commandments and regulations. So this is prior to Christ's coming. They were righteous living people. They obeyed the law. They were close to Jehovah. And Zechariah was one of the temple priests. But they had no children because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both very old. Very old. Okay. So one day Zechariah was serving God in the temple because it was his turn. And as the custom of the priests, he was chosen by lot. That's not capital L, that's little l. You know, to enter the sanctuary and burn incense in the presence of God. So Zechariah was on his own, physically speaking. While the incense was being burned, a great crowd stood outside praying. Now here's Zechariah doing what he'd done before in his turn. It wasn't anything unfamiliar to him. He was on his own though, in the sanctuary. An angel of the Lord, Gabriel, appeared standing on the right of the incense altar. Now that's a bit scary. That's a tad scary. You see this great white bloke standing beside the altar. You've been in here before. You've been on your own. God's presence was there. You understood that. But not a big white hairy man. Saying, don't be afraid. You know? That's like saying as the plane is crashing, put your face mask on and breathe normally, isn't it? You're going down in a screaming heap, but breathe normally. I don't think so. Well, Zechariah, in my version, in verse 12, it says, Zechariah was overwhelmed with fear. He was scared, witless. You know. But the angel said, look, don't be afraid, Zechariah. God has heard your prayer, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son. Now, there's the first anomaly. They were barren, but obviously Zechariah and Elizabeth, even though they were old, were still praying for children. God has heard your prayer, and you're going to have a son, and you're going to name him John. You will have great joy and gladness, and many will rejoice with you at his birth, for he will be great in the eyes of the Lord. He must never touch wine or hard liquor, and he will be filled with the Holy Ghost even before his birth. He will persuade many Israelites to turn to the Lord their God. He will be a man with the spirit and power of Elijah, the prophet of old. He will precede the coming of the Lord, preparing the people for his arrival. This is the prophet of the Lord's arrival, Jehovah Messiah. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children. He will change the disobedient minds to accept godly wisdom. Now that's quite clear instructions. It wasn't like Gabriel stood up there and said, yep, you're going to have a baby, it'll be a boy, see you later. He gave him clear detail. It was well thought out. Zechariah was left in no doubt that this was not going to be an accident. Okay, you will have a son, he will be great in the eyes of the Lord, he's not going to touch wine or hard liquor, he'll be filled with the Spirit even before his birth, he'll persuade many, he'll be a man with the Spirit and power of Elijah, he will precede the coming of Christ, preparing people for his arrival, and he's just going to be effective for God. It's an incredible pronouncement. And what's Zechariah's response? He says, how can I know this is going to happen? I'm an old man now, and the wife, well, she's well along in years. That's his response to this tremendous announcement. He's going to be a man filled with God before birth. And Zechariah says, so how's this going to happen? The old girl, she's a bit on in years, you know, and I'm no spring chicken either. Well, Gabriel was a little bit cranky at that. He says, I am Gabriel. I stand in the very presence of God. It was he who sent me to bring you this good news. And now, since you didn't believe what I said, you won't be able to speak until the child is born, for my words will certainly come true at the proper time. Gabriel was not impressed at all. And if Zechariah wanted a sign, he was going to get one. And he did. 9 months of silence. Now, if any of you pray for that here today, probably won't come true. Not for your husbands, anyway. So Zechariah questioned the ability of God to perform this miracle. It was a real doubting on his part. And the people outside, they're waiting for Zechariah. He finally comes out and he can't speak. And they were quite astounded by that. Now we're going to go to the end of that chapter, right over the end. Verse 57, now it was time for Elizabeth's baby to be born. It was a boy. Surprise, surprise. The word spread quickly to her neighbours and relatives that the Lord had been very kind to her, and everyone rejoiced with her. When the baby was 8 days old, all the relatives and friends came for the circumcision ceremony. They wanted to name him Zechariah after his father. But Elizabeth said, no, his name is John. What? They exclaimed, and you can see all the women fussing. You can't call him John. There's no John in your family line. Call him by his father's name. That's tradition. He should be Zechariah. And sort of she's standing there with all this mob of women saying, call him John, Zechariah. That's his father's name. Call him Zechariah. She's going, oh no, no, his name is John. There's no one in your family by that name. So they asked the baby's father, communicating him to him by making gestures, a bit like last night. How do you call name? What do you call name? I don't even know the, the other game that you play. Charades. I don't even know the charades for Zechariah. Anyway, they're gesturing to him. You know, what are you going to call this kid? And he motioned for a bit of a writing tablet. And to everyone's surprise, he wrote this. His name is John. And that was the key. Finally, Zechariah had completed what he had failed to start when Gabriel had come. He'd accepted God's message, he'd accepted God's gift, and he had obeyed and called this child John. And instantly Zechariah could speak again, and he did what he should have done 9 months earlier. He praised God. All the neighbours were absolutely astounded, and the news of what had happened spread throughout the Judean hills. Everyone who heard about it reflected on these events and asked, I wonder what this child will turn out to be. For the hand of the Lord is surely upon him in a special way. And you can see what some of the people would have said later on. You know, when John came out eating, you know, sort of strange animals and came out with a grasshopper's leg sticking out of his... See, I knew nothing good would come of this. He should have been called Zechariah. Calling him John, it's bent his mind. But God had great things in store for John the Baptist. Let's have a look at the other instance of a similar event. We'll go to Luke chapter 1 again and verse 26. In the 6th month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel again to Nazareth, a village in Galilee, to a virgin named Mary. She was engaged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of King David. Gabriel appeared to her and said, greetings, favoured woman, the Lord is with you. Confused and disturbed, Mary tried to think what the angel could mean. Don't be frightened, Mary, the angel told her, for God has decided to bless you. You will become pregnant and have a son, and you are to name him Jesus. He will be very great and will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his ancestor David, and he will reign over Israel forever. His kingdom will never end. And Mary's question to the angel, how can I have a baby? I'm a virgin. And the angel replied, the Holy Spirit will come upon you, the power of the Most High will overshadow you, so the baby born to you will be holy, and he will be called the Son of God. And Gabriel then relates to Mary the fact that Elizabeth has become pregnant in her old age, because Elizabeth had kept herself concealed. She's 6 months pregnant by this stage, and Mary still didn't know. Subsequent to this announcement, Mary goes up after a few days and visits Zechariah and Elizabeth. And you know the Magnificat that follows, but we're not dealing with that. That's probably a separate issue altogether. So Gabriel says, your relative Elizabeth has become pregnant in her old age. People used to say she was barren, but she's already in her 6th month. for nothing is impossible with God. Mary responded, I am the Lord's servant. I am willing to accept whatever he wants. May everything you have said come true. And the angel left her. The question that Mary asked was similar to the question Zechariah asked, but the motives were different. Mary asked a question out of just, how can it happen? I'm a virgin. Biologically, it can't happen. Zechariah says, oh, give me a break. His was a question lacking in faith. His was a question of ridicule, and Mary's wasn't. And Gabriel responded accordingly. The pronouncement in Luke chapter 1, verses 26 through to where we've read, fulfilled a great number of prophecies, just some of them. In Micah chapter 5, verse 2, Micah says, see, I told you Bethlehem would be the place. Isaiah chapter 7, verse 14, behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. And Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Now, commentators differ on how old Mary was at this time, but generally they say that she was in her middle teens, 14 or 15. Now think about a 15-year-old. Any of you got 15-year-old daughters? I've got one that's 14 in November. So you've got to say 14 because that's what they're like until they turn about 28 and then they go, oh, right up to the day before the birthday, you stay the same age. She's 14. That's about the age of Mary. And you think about how a 14-year-old, and 14-year-olds today are much more worldly-wise, they're much more informed, and an angel comes and says, well, you're going to be blessed and you're going to have a child. Now here's Mary, she's betrothed to Joseph at this stage, and not one question to Gabriel about the implications of the announcement, just how can it happen. There wasn't a question like, how am I going to tell Joseph? No. What do you go up to Joseph and go, oh, lovey, I've got something to tell you. No. And he goes, yes, Mary, what is it? Because he can tell by her voice that it's probably bad news. And she goes, well, like it, we're going to have a child. And he goes, don't kid me, Mary. You know that can't happen. How does she tell her mum and dad? How does she go home? Hey, mum, good news! Even today, if a 15-year-old goes and tells mum and dad that the girl wouldn't be engaged, one would hope at 15, you go home to mum and dad and say, guess what, mum, I'm going to have a baby. Well, after mum recovers consciousness, you know, they go, okay, Mary, so who's the father so we can stone both of you together? And she goes, well, it's God. And the father goes, now, Mary, I've told you before about telling fibs. No, Dad, honestly, I've thought that through myself. How did she do it? Because the Bible doesn't say the angel visited her mum and dad. It just said that the angel visited Joseph and put him out of his misery. I just wonder how she told her mother and father. I want to ask them when I go to heaven. You know, they didn't have Valium then. No. So her question to the angel was none of that, none of the implications. You know what you're opening up, the prospect of Gabriel, none of that. Just says, how will it happen? I am your servant, be it unto me. Now, the Bible talks about Mary saying to the angel over the page, I am the Lord's servant, I am willing to accept whatever the Lord wants. May everything you have said come true. And the angel left. And when you follow through the life of Mary, and we're going to touch on a couple of other instances, Mary pondered them in her heart. As Jesus grew and issues arose and things occurred, Mary pondered them in her heart. She absorbed them. And as mums, we do that a lot, don't we? Something will happen, and a happy thing will happen, and we can show a great deal of joy and enthusiasm. Oh, I love that, it's great. When it's something not so good, when you see your child hurt by someone and you know that you can't strike out at that person, that's not your role, but you feel for the hurt that your child is suffering, and you take it inside and you pray and you say, God, give them strength, they've got to work through this. Mary felt no less. But think of the incidents that Christ had to face. Mary kept them in her heart. Now, Joseph found out through a dream that the situation was fine. Up until that point in time, and again the Bible's silent on the way that Joseph found out that Mary was pregnant, but he found out she was pregnant, and he was working out a way of dealing with the situation sensitively. If the news became public that she was pregnant, she would be stoned if Joseph owned up that it wasn't his. One of the commentators that I read, it's quite some years ago, and I have no reason to doubt this, that in the days that Joseph and Mary lived, engagement was a little bit more than our engagement. All of the ceremony or the formality of marriage had occurred, but there was a mutual agreement to stay apart for a period, and then the marriage was consummated. Joseph knew that he had not been with Mary. You would know something like that, one would expect. But such was his love and regard for her that he was trying to think of a way to deal with this sensitively. About 30 or 40 years ago, he would have sent her up the country, you know, to have a holiday in the country for a few months. That wasn't going to work. It was a little bit more serious than that. She'd come back and have this child, and how were they going to explain it? So Joseph was trying to work out, now, how am I going to do this so that Mary doesn't get stoned, I don't get too embarrassed? Golly, I'll have to sleep on it. So that's what he does. And I tell you what, the angel's really busy, isn't he? Back he comes again. And he says to Joseph, listen, Joseph, don't worry about the fact that your wife Mary is pregnant. For what she has conceived, the child she has conceived, is conceived of the Holy Spirit. And she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. And Joseph was aroused from sleep, and he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took Mary as his wife, that is, they cohabitated, but that is all. And he did not know her until she brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus. And that's another miracle, a miracle of self-control. Because newlyweds aren't known for that. Well, they're not, are they? Not unless there's something. I've heard of newlyweds, one friends of ours, they went on their honeymoon, and about the second day into the honeymoon, she got the worst case of sunburn in the world. Now, that made things a bit tricky. But for 9 months, Joseph was prepared to respect not only Mary, but the message that he'd received from God. Neither of them had any doubt about the value and the validity of the message. They didn't have all the answers, but they were prepared to obey. Mary continued on in her pregnancy. Now, let's go through some of the things then that the child was born, and this is the child that Mary was told will be the king of the Jews. He's going to rule forever. His kingdom will know no end. Gabriel told Mary that. Where was Jesus born? In a stable. Now, whenever we draw a stable, you know, the one that Jesus was born in, when I was a kid, and even now, I draw clean hay. Do you? So do I. It's always nicer. But does that necessarily mean it was? Here's Mary. She's right out here like the Goodyear blimp, and they've got to go for a census. Now, you'd need that like you'd need a hole in the head, eh? There's a lady here that's 11 weeks off being pregnant, and she came to camp. 11 weeks off being... Ah, bless you, don't 11 weeks off having a child. Sir? Where's that pink bib or where... And she came to camp. Now, she's quite... because whenever you say, when are you due, her first response, I've heard her say this to three people, she says, when do you think? Because she knows they're going to say, oh, about 2 weeks, and she's not, she's 11 weeks off. And she came to camp. Now, give that lady another 11 weeks so that she's right due. Is she going to come to camp? I don't think so. She's going to need a crane to get in and out of bed. We can remember that, those of us that have children, can't we? You know why that is? I better watch the time. You know why it is? Because God knows if we stay comfortable all the pregnancy. You know how there's some things you get away with not doing when you're pregnant? We'll want to stay pregnant forever. So by the time you're due, you're not sleeping, the baby's got his foot or her foot on your bladder. You know, you're forever sort of saying, excuse me, but where's the lady? You get like that so that eventually you say, oh, I can't wait for this to be over. Well, Mary's at that stage and she's on a donkey. You know, has God got a sense of humour or what? Now, the Bible prophecies have to be fulfilled, you know. Jesus has to be born in Bethlehem. That's fine, don't have a problem with that. Couldn't they have gone a bit earlier? So they found a house and they got everything, and then she gets caught short and she's in her own stable with clean hay. Nah, too simple. So she's full term and she's got to go and attend a census on the donkey. Joseph, and all the pictures show you Joseph walking beside, holding the donkey's halter so the thing doesn't bolt off into the blue. They get to the city and everything's booked out because there's a convention. Everyone's there to attend for this census. And so they're knocking on the door, and Joseph's sort of looking a bit haggard, as fathers to be usually are. You know, at the end of the birth they go, oh, gee, that was hard. You know what I did with my husband? For all of mine, I didn't let him go to the toilet. My first labour was 36 hours. Actually, he did go for that one. They got slightly shorter. We had a dragon lady that was in the maternity ward for my first, and her reputation was she wouldn't let the men back in. She didn't think men belonged in the labour ward, you know. So they'd go and do what they had to do at nature calls. And when they got to come back, this dragon lady had sent in, she said, no, you can't go in. The doctor's examining your wife or some other, you know, sort of reason. And I'd grab him by the hand and I'd say, you're going to come back, aren't you? And he'd say, yeah. You make sure you come back, won't you? Yeah. You will be back, won't you? Yeah. He came back each time. And he was there for all the births. And Joseph's got this drawn look of a father about to be. And he's knocking on the door saying, excuse me, can I have a bed? I'm sorry, just a bed for the wife will do. Look, she's pregnant. She's just about to have the baby. Sorry, mate, we're all full. Got no room. They knocked and they knocked and they knocked and they knocked, and eventually the innkeeper that they knocked on said, I've got no room. I've got no room for you. And as he's about to shut the door, he goes, oh, but wait a minute. There's the stable. You're welcome to have that. And Joseph says, thanks very much. That'll do fine. Nobody had room for the Messiah. And we've got to make sure that in our busy lives, we make room for the Messiah. And it need not necessarily be that you have your morning devotion. I don't. I hate mornings. Heaven for me will be where there isn't a morning. You know? There'll be 1 6 o'clock and it'll be at night. But you make time for God. And, you know, if you've got... There's one lady here with 3 children under 19 months. There is. She's got twin boys and a little girl. And the little girl's really placid. That lady has her devotions in the toilet. Because that's the only place she's going to get any time. And you know God doesn't mind. He doesn't. Leave your book there that you read your devotion out of. A lot of the times you can't shut the door because the kids go, Mum, Mum. Just in case you flush yourself down, I think. They want to check that you're still warm and vertical. But wherever you can get time with the Lord, that's where you spend it. Make sure that you leave time for God. You have room for Jehovah. Mary's life went on. He's 12 years old, they go to the temple. And, I mean, nowadays it's a bit difficult to understand, isn't it, that they could be travelling for 3 days and then go, oh, where's Jesus? He's around here somewhere. Oh, I must be with the relatives. They've been doing that for 3 nights. Now, where's Jesus? Oh, he's over at Auntie Mary, Auntie May's. He's over with the kids over the back. They're probably building fires. Shopping. Your little kids sort of go, the first time they go, I've got to go to the toilet. And you say, hang on, we nearly finished the shopping. They go, I can go on my own now. And you go, oh, I suppose you are 12. Not quite. But the first time you let your kids go to the toilet at the supermarket, you sort of say, now go straight there, don't you talk to any strangers, come straight back here, I'll give you 3 minutes. Make it quick. Because you worry about them. In those days, they didn't. They all just came together like a mob. 3 days later, they sort of go and check. Uncle Toby, is Jesus with you? Couldn't even remember his name. No. Auntie Maud, is Jesus with you? No. Have you seen him? No, I haven't seen him since... Oh, days ago. And imagine the worry that these mum and dad, finally they go, we've lost him! The Son of God, and we've lost him! So they had to find him. He wasn't lost, but they were. Anyway, they go back and they say, they find him arguing with the grown-ups in the temple. Isn't that wonderful? You're 12-year-old. I've told you to respect your elders. How many times have you told your kids not to argue with the grown-ups? And the kids, they get bigger and they go, but they were wrong. And here's Jesus in the temple. And Mary does. She says, why did you do it to us? Why did you make us worry? And Jesus says, I must be about my Father's business. And Mary pondered these things in her heart. She didn't understand it, but she pondered it. She took it in. And then... The Bible goes silent on Jesus' life for a lot of years until he reaches his 30s. And the first miracle at a wedding. Isn't that wonderful? At a wedding. And they run out of... This is a real well-known story. They run out of wine and Mary says, don't worry about it. Jesus will fix it. Do you wonder what he was like as a kid growing up? Imagine being his younger brother. Oh, puke. This Jesus does everything right. You know, the big brother, the big brothers and sisters usually they set the benchmark because mum and dad have had time with them and you know they've done the right thing usually. Why can't you be like your older brother Eddie? To the point when everyone dislikes Eddie because he's perfect. What would you do with Jesus as an elder brother? You know? The water's cold, Mum, I don't want a bath. Well, Jesus had a bath and that's okay, he hovered above it. Go and clean your school shoes. Jesus hasn't done his, that's right, his doesn't get dirty. You're not going to win, are you? I think it would be terrible. But the Bible's silent on his growing up years. But Mary knew that the fulfilment of the prophecy had occurred because she'd watched Jesus growing up. And he gets to this wedding, they run out of wine, and she says, look, just go and ask Jesus, he'll fix it. And I think it would have hurt Christ a lot to have to correct his own mum. And he does. He says, my time isn't yet come. But you notice he does it anyway. And not just makes a bit of, you know, a bit of weak wine, makes the best, absolutely the best. And when Christ does something for us, it is the best. Never doubt that, because he's always kept the best for us. And sometimes what he has for us, we wouldn't evaluate it as the best at all. But it is, because he's promised. Mary kept these things in her heart. She kept internalising them. She kept on saying, yes, this is the son that I was prophesied to have. This is God's son. She watched him heal people. She watched him raise people from the dead. She watched him move further and further away from her as his ministry demanded. He took the 12 disciples. And there wasn't so much room for Mum then, was there? And gee, it's hard to let go. Believe me, it's hard to let go. And then we go to John chapter 19. John chapter 19 and verse 23. When the soldiers had crucified Jesus, they divided his clothes among the four of them. They also took his robe, but it was seamless, woven in one piece from the top. So they said, let's not tear it, but let's throw a dice. See who gets it. This fulfilled the scripture that said, they divided my clothes among them and threw dice for my robe. So that is what they did. Standing near the cross were Jesus' mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. Now let's just stop there for a second. They're at the foot of the cross. And what has Mary seen so far? She's seen her son, whom she's nurtured, physically nurtured, for 33 years, beaten beyond recognition, tried in a kangaroo court and found guilty for stuff that was just trumped up. We today are naturally incensed when we feel an injustice is done. Even something like, I got a speeding ticket and it wasn't me, it was the car next door. And we get incensed. How, those rotten coppers, we say? Here's Mary who has watched while her son, who's done nothing but good, has tried by a kangaroo court. The judge, in one instance, knew that he was innocent and washed his hands of the whole case, but he was too gutless to stand up against the crowd and allowed a perfectly righteous man to be crucified. Not just crucified, but beaten beyond recognition first. And that's hard enough for us to visualise, but his mother's at the foot of the cross and she's seen it all happen. How would you feel? There's a group called Victims of Crime, and they support the families of particularly murder victims. And they put out a newsletter. And some of the poems and the prose that are written in that is very startling. It's fathers and mothers, wives and husbands, exposing the raw emotion that they feel at the loss of the family member. And it's a situation that is senseless. There's often no reason for it. And here's Mary at the foot of the cross of a man who had done nothing wrong, ever. Her son, whom she loved, on a cross, with his back raw like mincemeat, and his face beyond recognition. And Jesus, in that position, was able to do this. When Jesus saw his mother standing there beside the disciple he loved, he said to her, "Woman, he is your son." And he said to this disciple, "She is your mother." And from then on, this disciple took her into his home. And Mary's accumulating all of this in her heart, and she's not coping. I wouldn't. The thought of it, I don't cope with. And Mary's faith says, whatever you want, let me be available to you. She said that 33 years earlier, and her stand hadn't changed one bit. And you know, that's all that Christ asks of us. That we say, yes, please, no matter what the request is. Sometimes you don't know the answer. And I was talking to one lady here who's got a particularly difficult situation, and she would love to know what's going to happen in the future, and God won't tell her. And I don't know why, and she doesn't know why. Perhaps it's because God knows that the future, 3 or 4 years out, for today would be too much. Or perhaps today is enough, and the future is going to be so happy that today is going to be unbearable. It could be either. I hope it's the happy one. That compared to the happiness that she will experience in 3 or 4 years' time, today, if she knows the future, would be unbearable. But Christ says to us, I'll ask you the question, will you? I just want your answer. Yes, I will. That's all he asks for, but he doesn't promise all of the answers. Now, with Mary, he had the answer. He offered another son to her, John. He said, this is going to be your son. John, she's going to be your mother. He filled that gap. She did have other children, but the Bible is silent about those. Christ says to us, will you? Will you take me at face value when I ask for something and I don't give you all the information that you'd like? Will you say yes? I'll read you something in closing that shows you that he leads by example. He's been in that position. This is out of Max Licardo's books. You may know it. He placed one scoop of clay upon another until a form lay lifeless on the ground. All of the garden's inhabitants paused to witness the event. Hawks hovered, giraffes stretched, trees bowed, butterflies paused on petals and watched. You will love me, nature, God said. I made you that way. You will obey me, universe, for you were designed to do so. You will reflect my glory, skies, for that is how you were created. But this one will be like me. This one will be able to choose. All was silent as the Creator reached into himself and removed something yet unseen. A seed. It's called choice. The seed of choice. Creation stood in silence and gazed upon the lifeless form. An angel spoke. But what if? What if he chooses not to love me, the Creator finished? Come, I'll show you. Unbound by today, God and the angel walked into the realm of tomorrow. There, see the fruit of the seed of choice, both the sweet and the bitter. The angel gasped at what he saw. Spontaneous love, voluntary devotion, chosen tenderness. Never had he seen anything like these. He felt the love of the Adams. He heard the joy of Eve and her daughters. He saw the food and the burdens shared. He absorbed the kindness and marvelled at the warmth. Heaven has never seen such beauty, my Lord. Truly, this is your greatest creation. Ah, but you've only seen the sweet. Now witness the bitter. A stench enveloped the pair. The angel turned in horror and proclaimed, what is it? The Creator spoke only one word, selfishness. The angel stood speechless as they passed through centuries of repugnance. Never had he seen such filth, rotten hearts, ruptured promises, forgotten loyalties, children of the Creator wandering blindly in lonely labyrinths. This is the result of choice, the angel asked. Yes. They will forget you? Yes. They will reject you? Yes. They will never come back. Some will, most won't. What will it take to make them listen? The Creator walked on in time, further and further into the future, until he stood by a tree. A tree that would be fashioned into a cradle. Even then he could smell the hay that would surround him. With another step into the future, he paused before another tree. It stood alone. the stubborn ruler of a bald hill. The trunk was thick and the wood was strong. Soon it would be cut, soon it would be trimmed, soon it would be mounted on a stony brow of another hill, and soon he would be hung on it. He felt the wood rub against his back, a back that he did not yet wear. "Will you go there?" the angel asked. "I will." "Is there no other way?" "There is not." "Wouldn't it be easier not to plant the seed? Wouldn't it be easier not to give the choice?" "Oh, it would," the Creator spoke slowly, "but to remove the choice is to remove the love." He looked around the scene and foresaw three figures hung on three crosses, arms spread, heads fallen forward. They moaned with the wind. Men clad in soldiers' garb sat on the ground near the trio. They played games in the dirt and laughed. Men clad in religion stood off to one side. They smiled, arrogant, cocky. They had protected God, they thought, by killing this false one. Women clad in sorrow huddled at the foot of the hill, speechless. Faces tear-streaked, eyes downward. One put her arm around another and tried to lead her away. She said, "I will stay," she said, "I will stay." All heaven stood to fight. All nature rose to rescue. All eternity poised to protect. But the Creator gave no command. "It must be done," he said, and withdrew. But as he stepped back in time, he heard the cry that he would someday scream, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" He wrenched at tomorrow's agony. The angel spoke softly. "It would be less painful." The Creator interrupted softly, "But it wouldn't be love." They stepped into the garden again. The Maker looked earnestly at his creation. A monsoon of love swelled up within him. He had died for the creation before he had made him. God's form bent over the sculptured face and breathed. Dust stirred on the lips of the new one. The chest rose, cracking the red mud. The cheeks fleshened, a finger moved, and an eye opened. But more incredible than the moving of the flesh was the stirring of the spirit. Those who could see the unseen gasped. The angel, not speaking of the face, the features, or the body, looked inside at the soul. "It's eternal," he gasped. And the one who had chosen to love had created one who could love in return. Now it's our choice.